On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC, a community of solvers coming together in unexpected ways. It all adds up to the new equation.
Welcome back, Gavin Riley with you on the record this Sunday lunchtime, the 7th of November 2021, which is, history buffs, the anniversary of Richard Nixon's re-election as US president in spectacular style, seeking re-election back in 1972, winning 60% of the popular vote and carrying 49 of the US's 50 states. And you would think that for a man who was clearly so popular at the time, at least versus his Democratic opponent on the day, that if that president were to have visited Ireland, it would still be the sort of thing fondly remembered and fated to this day. But you'd be wrong, because 2 years before this high watermark of his popularity, Tricky Dicky had actually visited Ireland in what probably remains the most forgotten US presidential visit to Ireland. But at the time, there were some strong emotions and a little bit of confusion as well, because this was a world much removed from that of JFK. And Donald Fallon has popped in from his DeLorean to go and tell us all about it. We really must get you a parking spot for that thing. It's just clogging up the office so much.
Gavin, I think everyone forgets this visit. I think people who met Nixon on the visit forget this visit.
I was going to say, like, I covered a presidential visit only about 2 years ago when his neighbours stopped in Shannon for a couple of hours, and even I forget that I was around for that one. Very few people, American or otherwise, could probably name the man who I deliberately didn't name in the intro, who stood against Richard Nixon in 72.
Yeah, if I were president, it would take me 24 hours and the stroke of a pen to terminate all military operations in Southeast Asia. Those are the words of Senator George McGovern. And they probably cost him the election, to be honest, because he was seen as being way too soft on foreign policy, that he's going to pull out of Vietnam with no honour. And, you know, George McGovern, to be honest, he's now little more than a difficult pub quiz question. You know, who was the Democrat who stood against Nixon in 1972? But it sounds almost comical that a single state would go to him, you know, the would-be president, Massachusetts. And a few short years later, when Nixon resigned in disgrace, a popular bumper sticker in America began appearing: "Don't blame me, I'm from Massachusetts."
Well, as I was just telling you before we went on air, this caused me to go back and look at electoral maps as well. And the 1984 map of Ronald Reagan versus Walter Mondale, again, another extraordinary obliteration where it's only one state. And to think that Democrats could even win within living memory from that. The only reason they reminded me of the Ryder Cup scoreboard from a couple of weeks ago, because there was so much red and so little blue.
Yes.
That's what they reminded me of. Nixon's historical reputation, as we all know, is primarily Watergate and the resignation and the whole, "I am not a crook." But he is much more complex than that.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, really. I mean, we thought we were going to see this early last year happening again, but he is the only president to have resigned from the office. And it's a scandal that has inspired Hollywood and countless political studies. But look, Richard Nixon's legacy is pretty complex. There was nuclear arms control agreements with the Soviet Union, very, very important. A diplomatic opening with China. And most significantly, the withdrawal of American troops from Vietnam. But that was, history now recalls, an American defeat. And, you know, peace on our planet seemed pretty much impossible in his lifetime. But there was at least a great hope of space. And it was Nixon in the White House when man walked on the moon. I love how he talks to Aldrin and Armstrong while they're up there, and he calls it the most historic phone call ever made from the White House. But who remembers that stuff, really? Well, we all remember those events, but who remembers Nixon as the man at the Oval Office desk? It's Watergate we all remember. And now we stick that suffix "gate" on kind of any political fallout here or elsewhere. Golfgate, Monica Gate, Gamer Gate, Marion Gate, you name it. Nixon's downfall was so dramatic. That is one of his legacies.
Sometimes I wonder what we would do if there was some scandal involving some sort of, like, you know, hinged mechanism that, through which you enter a field. Like, honestly, what would we call that? Would it have to be like Metagate or just Gategate? What would we do if there was a scandal about the theatre down on Parnell Square? Nixon was only the second US president to visit us, but it was worlds removed from the other visit that we all remember a few years earlier.
It's 7 years after the visit of John F. Kennedy, John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Kennedy calls that visit, in his own words, "the four best days of my life." And it was a lot of things. It was a milestone moment for us as a nation. Telefiche Aaron was brand new. So this kind of new technology, this new thing in our lives, got its first big day out. It was a showpiece event for Ireland on the world stage. And Kennedy played a blinder. And we can cringe now when we read the transcripts. But is it really much different from Obama? Who remembers that Obama line in College Green? I've come to find the long-lost apostrophe in the name Obama. I mean, it was awful. But just like Obama, Kennedy did the serious, and he did the serious very well. You know, he went to Arbor Hill, laid a wreath for the 1960 and executed. But he also had the folksy stuff. You know, if the day was clear enough, and if you went down to the bay and you looked west and your sight was good enough, you would see Boston, Massachusetts, he tells them in Galway. And if you did, you would see down working on the docks Dohertys and Flahertys and Ryans and cousins of yours who've gone to Boston and made good. You know, you give the people what they want.
Of the heartstrings. Yeah,
yeah, give the people what they want. And JFK was very, very good at that. And you know, if John F. Kennedy launched the Third World War, he probably would have arrived in Ireland to a hero's reception anyway.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it didn't really matter what Kennedy's foreign policy was. He came to Ireland as a representative of Irish Catholic success. The immigrant done good. And I think US foreign policy meant nothing in 1963 in Ireland. Mm. But Nixon is something else entirely. There is Irish blood, potentially, but it's very different. And there's the unavoidable foreign policy issue. There's Vietnam.
Yeah. So everything had changed in the world, especially for the young, between these two visits. And it's all well and good for Kennedy to offer that schmaltzy stuff in 1963 about looking west and seeing your relatives over in the ports. But the same sort of stuff doesn't land 7 years later.
Yeah. A political awakening had happened among Irish young people in the second half of the 1960s. So there's international things that interest some of them. You know, May 68 in Paris, the American civil rights movement. But at home, there's the eruption of the civil rights question in the north. And in the south, there were things like the Dublin Housing Action Committee. Young people are very, very political in Ireland by the time that Nixon comes here, by comparison to Kennedy. So, you know, Ireland just seems like a more politically conscious place. And even the American embassy in Dublin are kind of hinting at this towards Washington. John Mulqueen, who wrote a great book about the Cold War in Ireland, he writes that following the ambush of civil rights marchers in the north in January 69, the US embassy informed Washington that the Northern Ireland civil rights issue could radicalise students in the south. So there was a kind of belief in American political circles that, you know, the idea of anyone protesting John F. Kennedy would have been laughable. Mm. But what happens if we send, you know, Richard Nixon into the Emerald Isle?
Yeah, which is fascinating if you try to distill from that the whole essence of Ireland being largely pro-Democrat and anti-Republican, that maybe that's where it sort of germinates from a little bit. Nixon himself, you know, despite this idea of this being a grand homecoming of his own sorts as well, it didn't sound overtly enthusiastic in being here or even really convinced that this was a homecoming.
Yeah, he's greeted at Shannon Airport by Jack Lynch with the Cave Mila Falcha and everything else. But, you know, it seems that what the Nixon administration want to do is try and get a little bit of that magic of the Kennedy visit. Mm. The Irish vote is a big vote in the States, but it's a second and third generation vote even then. But it's still a big, big vote. And Nixon, they bring him to the Quaker burial ground at Hodgetown near Tomahoe in County Kildare, where his mother, Hannah Milhouse's ancestors, were buried. But there's a distance in the visit. And I think we kind of hear the distance in his own voice, the audio of Nixon speaking after getting off the plane.
We have a little bit of recording of that. Let's take a listen.
I have never had the opportunity of driving through the Irish countryside, of going back to where they say my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents came from. Now, I know for sure, however, that in Mrs. Nixon's case, the proof is much clearer. As a matter of fact, I can't find anybody in Ireland that will claim me. But I I am sure that as far as Ms. Nixon is concerned, that her grandfather, of course, came from Ireland. And if her credentials were open to any question, I can tell you that when I married her, her name was Patricia Ryan, and she celebrated her birthday on St. Patrick's Day. So that must prove something.
It's like there's a nice schmaltzy stuff, and you can clearly hear, as you said, that he's trying to recreate this kind of JFK magic. But there's already a kind of a removed or a distance that he's talking very in the abstract.
Yeah,
that he doesn't really buy into it.
The key words in what he says there are where they say,
they tell me.
Yeah.
Because you don't know it for yourself. Decide all of this and this general layer of skepticism and the flatness in which it's received. In Kildare, this is big, big news. And they do take the chance to show themselves off.
Yeah, there's huge positivity towards the visit. And a visit of a US president is enormous for any Irish county. It's a massive event. And I mean, you don't often end up with these words at the front of the New York Times. The president toured the green flats and hills of County Kildare today. I mean, that's the kind of...
mostly flats, in fairness.
Yeah, that's the kind of local showcasing that you're going to take. And, and reading the report, actually, it's not even clear that the New York Times were convinced by all of this. They write of how, on the question of Mr. Nixon's ancestors, an energetic search inspired by the president's visit has turned up a 98-year-old resident who said he was told in his youth that Mr. Nixon's sixth great-grandfather had lived and died amongst the Timahoe Quakers 3 centuries ago. A granite marker recording the president's visit now lies beneath 2 ash trees... and settles any remaining argument by stating that his maternal ancestors rest there. So, I mean, that journalist wasn't entirely convinced by this experiment either.
Well, think just for the logic of that. A 98-year-old resident who said he'd been told in his youth that a relative of Nixon... I mean, in his youth, like 70 or 80 years previous, what was he to know that Richard Nixon would emerge as this sort of thing? Like, you know, oh, some lad in America who's going to be famous in a few generations. His people were from here. In Dublin, it's met with even more skepticism because there are some eggs thrown at the car.
Yeah, Nixon's car is making its way through the streets near Dublin Castle, Lord Edward Street, and a series of eggs are thrown. And some of them actually hit the car, which is like, can you imagine that happening today? It's just, one, you wouldn't know what car he was in because a US president's motorcade is, you know, speaking of, you know, what's bad for the environment, a US presidential motorcade is bad for the environment.
Yeah.
But one of the egg throwers, Marion de Borken, she featured in a documentary on the visit, and she remembered that I disguised myself, I made myself look like an American tourist. I had dark glasses, a headscarf and a trench coat. And that's the stereotypical view of an American tourist in 1970s Ireland, none of which I ever wore normally. But while some eggs hit the car, none of them hit the president.
2 years on, and you know, 2 years from all of this, it was all over in Nixon, and of course he resigned in some spectacular style.
Yeah, he did. Oh my God, what a resignation that was. He said so much, and in other ways he said so little. There was no kind of formal acknowledgement of anything wrong.
Yeah.
And Richard Nixon, sometimes credited as being the US president who ended the Vietnam War, but the war went on after the Americans left. I mean, Saigon fell in 1975, 3 years later.
Wow.
But I still think the speech that he gave as he stepped away from office, you know, he masterfully highlighted the good of what he had done. He told the American people that together with the Soviet Union, we've made the crucial breakthroughs that have begun the process of limiting nuclear arms. We must set as our goal not just limiting, but reducing and finally destroying those terrible weapons so that they cannot destroy civilization and that the threat of nuclear war will no longer hang over the world and the people. And look, those were certainly honourable words. So, you know, it is neither, the legacy of Richard Nixon is neither black nor white.
No.
It is incredibly grey. But that visit to Ireland, needless to say, is a very forgotten part of that tale.
Yeah, worth checking up a little bit more if you do have some chance. Donald Fallon, as ever, thank you very much for talking us through that. Donald Fallon, author of Henrietta Street from Tenement to Suburbia and presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast on Dublin history. Thank you very much for joining us and we'll see you next week.
I just want to make the point, Gav, that after so many years of making radio with Stephen Jordan in the producer's seat, it's a sad day on one level.
It is. It is a very sad day for all of us on the record and all of us here in the wider News Talk family, because we are today saying goodbye to Stephen Jordan, who you will have heard me mention for several years now as being the overall producer and editor of this show, and indeed running the entire weekend schedule, basically, on News Talk, with the exception of some of Off the Ball, although he ran Off the Ball in the previous as well. So he's got a lot of strings to his bow. He's been knocking around Marconi for a few years now, and he's decided that now is the time to venture off for some pastures new, which is something we're all very sad about, but we all completely understand. On my behalf, Stephen, for everything that you've done for me on this program and for its predecessors and for everyone else on the station, thank you for everything you've done for all of us. You've been an absolute Trojan, and none of it would be what it was if you weren't here to do it. So thank you, and best of luck in everything you're doing well, and best of luck to the family who get you at home for some weekends for the foreseeable, which is nice for everybody. Thank you to Stephen. Thank you to Sinead Keogh, who's also working on the show today. Thank you to Georgia Cardoza on sound. And Off the Ball is up next. For me, Gavin Riley, and all the rest of the team, thanks for listening and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
On the record, on News Talk,
brought to you by PwC, a community of solvers coming together in unexpected ways. It all adds up to the new equation.